call to do likewise. The other night, Sonia and I were scrolling through Netflix, and we couldn't find a series. We were looking for something to watch. I know, what a terrible problem, right? Has anybody ever had this problem before? Our lives have changed since June, when Game of Thrones had its last episode, and it kind of went out with a fizzle, you know, in many people's eyes. And ever since that show has ended, it's made me think about other shows that people have loved and stuck with for very long periods of time, where they didn't exactly love the endings. Do you remember when Friends ended? Some people absolutely loved it, but others, they didn't, because their favorite characters didn't end up together in the end. I felt the same way about Frasier when that ended. I thought, oh, I can't believe Frasier didn't end up with her. What the heck? When the show Lost ended, people were up in arms because there were all these mysteries and unexplained things that seemed to go unanswered. It made it seem like the writers just kind of, you know, were making it up as they were going along. It's hard to watch our favorite series end. On May 14th, 1998, 21 years ago, I believe, 76 million people watched as Seinfeld concluded with Jerry, Elaine, George, and Kramer sitting in a jail cell. The show that was about nothing ended with them doing nothing and getting arrested for doing nothing. Okay? The bubble boy, the low talker, remember George Steinbrenner, all the enemies that they had throughout the 9 seasons came back to testify against them for breaking what was known as a Good Samaritan law. The 4 friends could have helped out a poor man during his time of need, but they sat back and they did nothing. They watched someone getting mugged and carjacked. They filmed it. They did nothing. They were not good neighbors, and they were brought to justice. And that's how the show ended. It ended with them doing nothing and then ending up doing nothing in a jail cell. Some people loved it. Some people thought it was ironic. Some people hated it. The reviews were mixed. But for us, luckily, Jesus tells us that we can't just do nothing. And Jesus provides us with a parable to live more fully into our calling, to be like the Good Samaritan, the one who goes and does likewise. So we can live with abundant life, and so that others can too. So I want to talk a little bit about this morning, about being a good neighbor, about our parable, and maybe what it might mean for us in this highly divided time that we live in our country. Our gospel lesson from Luke 10 tells us how to be a good neighbor. That guy doesn't look like a good neighbor up here. It's a menacing picture. And in our story, Jesus is kind of like a regular Mr. Rogers. He shows up and tells us what neighborliness is really about. We hear in the story that a lawyer, this legal scholar, someone who knows the Jewish law, stands up and tries to test Jesus' knowledge. And Jesus would have known the law, of course, as well, because he was a rabbi. It's kind of what they do. The lawyer says, "Rabbi, what do I have to do to inherit eternal life?" Now, this is different than the other gospels in which Jesus says, "What is the greatest commandment of all?" But whatever the case is, Jesus responds as he should. He puts the question back on the lawyer. And the lawyer, in response to this question, says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your strength, all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." Your neighbor as yourself. And this is, of course, the right answer. So Jesus says, "You are right. Do this and you will live." Now, I don't know about y'all, but is it always easy to be a good neighbor to somebody? No, it's not. It's not. A couple years ago, my family and I lived in an apartment, and we had interesting neighbors. I've had a lot of interesting neighbors throughout the years, but these folks had this black lab named Chewbacca. And Chewy would bark nonstop when his owners would leave the house. And I think they thought he was like the perfect dog, because when they got home, he stopped barking. But the moment that they left, he barked at everything. He barked at everything. He would run up and down the stairs, and we would hear him running up and down the stairs all day long. Whenever we would come home from work, he would bark. Whenever we'd open a closet door, he'd bark. When I'd open a window or shut a door, he'd bark. And he would just do this. But he was the perfect angel when his owners were around. And I have found myself, when I lived there, not being particularly neighborly to these folks. When I would see Chewy's owners come home, and I would be out in the garage, I would sort of grumble under my breath at them. I would say off-putting comments about them to my spouse. I would yell at Chewy when they weren't around through the walls of the apartment. I would make judgments based on what they looked like or what they did or when they got home from work or when their kids went to bed, because I heard them upstairs too. You know, maybe I should have just told them, hey, you know, your dog is barking, rather than resenting them behind their backs. I wasn't very neighborly, and I'm just trying to tell you, it's very easy to not be neighborly. And the thing is, I hadn't walked a mile in their shoes, or even tried to walk in them for a minute. Because loving your neighbor isn't always easy. We hear in our story that the lawyer says, well, who then is my neighbor, to Jesus? So Jesus goes on to tell us a story, and one that I think we can picture ourselves in. He says, there once was a man going from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he was robbed and stripped and beaten, and the robbers left him for dead in the road. A priest went down the road and saw him, stepped to the other side. A Levite, a holy person, did the same thing when he saw him. Stepped to the other side, but a Samaritan came near him, saw him, was moved. He bandaged him up, he treated his wounds, he set him on his own animal, gave him money, set him up in an inn, made sure he was safe and cared for, and ensured that he would even cover the rest of the cost of his care. It's like an insurance policy. But Jesus asked the lawyer, who was a neighbor to the man that fell into the hands of the robbers? Well, the lawyer responded, the one who showed him mercy. So Jesus says, go and do likewise. Go and do likewise. This call to go and do likewise is Jesus' call to the lawyer and his command, I think, for each of us. We are to do likewise. We are to be a good neighbor. And what does being a good neighbor look like? It looks like the Samaritan, but honestly, back in the day, nobody wanted to be the Samaritan. The Samaritans were the outsiders. The Samaritans were the unexpected heroes in this story. If you were sitting in Jesus' context and somebody would have shared this story with you, you would have had your socks knocked off. Because no one would expect this Samaritan person, this religious outsider, to be the one who's the hero over the priest and the Levite, the ones that are known to be the holy ones. But the thing is this, the priest and the Levite pass by, they're restricted by their worldview, by their religious system, and the Samaritan is not. The Samaritan is not restricted from seeing who Jesus sees, from seeing whom God desires to help. And so Jesus says, this is what a good neighbor looks like, not being confined in who it is that you can care for. God is not confined in God's way of caring for the world. I want to give us three lessons that we can take away from this story among the many different lessons in it about being a good neighbor to whom Jesus sees and whom God desires to help. The first thing I think we can take away is that the priest and the Levite, they saw this man beaten on the road, but they avoided him. They saw him, but they stepped around him. And I'm sure we've all done this at times. We've walked downtown. We've gone out to a restaurant and someone approaches us for money, or we see somebody on the other side of the road with their cup out asking for help, and you think, I'm just going to look at my cell phone, pretend that I'm making a call, or step to the other side. The thing is, these folks, they saw this man, but they walked to the other side of the road. And I think this tells us, in a way, they didn't see him as a person worth helping, worth their time, worth their effort, as a person of worth, a life worthy of being alive. Or due to their system of beliefs that they had, they weren't able to perceive him as a person who was worth life. So they walked around him like garbage. So the first thing we can take away from this is that the Samaritan saw this person, but saw him as more, saw him as a compromised life, a vulnerable person, a person in need, someone worthy of being alive. Especially troubling today is how we have heard rhetoric of humans who are less than or subhuman. Might make us think. So seeing someone and seeing them as worthy of being alive is the first thing that we can take away, and not being constrained in who it is that we perceive as being worth of life. The second thing I think we could take away is that the Samaritan, other than seeing this person left for dead on the road, was actually moved to help. The priest and the Levite may have actually physically seen the guy there, but they didn't really see him as a person. But they didn't do the crucial step of actually moving in and doing something. They didn't have compassion or mercy. So the Samaritan not only saw this person, but was moved by mercy to come close. Well, that's the second thing that's crucial. Being moved in your gut to do something and to get close with someone else. And when you're close with someone else, you become vulnerable. You become vulnerable to their stories and who they are as human beings. And I think that's important for all of us today, to hear the stories and listen to the stories of those that are outsiders. Third, after seeing him and coming close to him, the Samaritan has compassion. He not only sees the person, he not only is moved to want to do something and to get down and get close to him, but he has compassion. Tends to his wounds. He transports him to an inn. He makes sure he'll be taken care of. So seeing is vital. Drawing near is crucial. But the final and meaningful gesture is that the Samaritan doesn't stop there. He does something about the problem. So Jesus tells this story to show us what a good neighbor is. One who sees, one who's moved, and one who actually puts what they see into action. Go and do likewise, Jesus says, to the lawyer and to each of us. And the thing is, we don't know if the lawyer actually listened or not in the story. It's the last time we hear about it. But something that's important for us is that Jesus sides with those whom we have habitually seen as less than. Jesus in this story, I think, is the Samaritan. He chooses a Samaritan to embody whom he would act like in the parable. Jesus chooses one who was rejected by his audience to show where God has the possibility of showing up in the world. It might be helpful for us in this church to remind us that God shows up with and in and among and sides with and dwells with and embodies with those that are suffering. And I think Jesus weeps today because we can sometimes be like the lawyer. So the challenge for us is to live out the pattern that Jesus, the Samaritan, gives us to be a good neighbor, to go and do likewise, to see them, the other, the vulnerable, as human, to get down to someone else's level, to hear their story, to have compassion, and ultimately to act on it and do something about it. Amen?